What happens when five industry friends get together and talk about what they know best? The industry. The Radio Facts Radio Show is what happens. I'm Kevin Ross, the creator of the Radio Facts Radio Show, and I hope you enjoy this episode. If you have questions or comments, feel free to contact me, kevin@radiofacts.com.
Call Paul on a conference.
Oh, that's right. He's in the hotel room. You there, Kev?
Yeah. Yes.
Can y'all hear me?
Left.
I spoke to him earlier. What number you have?
As of, I didn't check in the last couple of hours. I know it's going up rapidly, but it's 9,500 listeners so far. A lot of
those world star hip hop numbers are real numbers.
You know what? They are for the industry.
You're listening to the Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
So I'm Muhammad, everyone calls me Jan. I have my own marketing and management firm, the Lewis Cortez Group, and I'm a former programmer.
I'm the poetess from Los Angeles. I'm a radio producer and podcast. I'm Dwayne McCleary. I'm a consultant to Epic Records, Def Jam Records, Cash Money Records, amongst others. Previously, I was at MCA Records, Death and Records, and Universal Motown Records.
Dan, I'm Paul Porter, old radiohead from Boston, New York, D.C. Worked at BET, worked at different places, and now I'm a rebel with a different cause. And have a website, RevRehab.com.
Okay, so I know Paul wanted to start with the Dunn trial, which I have not really been following that much, but Paul, I'll let you start.
Well, I mean, everybody's talking about racism and the effects of the Michael Dunn trial and Stand Your Ground in Florida. But, you know, from my knowledge, this confusion about Stand Your Ground has just reached epic proportion. It had nothing to do with Trayvon Martin's death. It had nothing to do with the Zimmerman verdict. I know they read it in the instructions. I'm a concealed carry permit holder in the state of Florida. And I think people just don't get it. They want to have something to protest about. And the bigger protest is not the law Stand Your Ground. It's the image that's constantly portrayed of young black males that has white folks, black males, scared of each other. Black people are scared of black people. And my point is that we've let these images just go wild, where everybody's a gangster, every song is about gang banging, and it's hurting these young males. And we don't get worried about it when they get killed in Chicago or in any other city in the country. But now everybody's in an uproar because Michael Dunn got off.
You know, that I put the one thing that concerns me, I get what you're saying, but what I'm really confused about and I can't understand is that why are we as a black community so adamant about this? You know, whenever there's a situation where a white person has done something wrong to us, but we ignore what happens in our own community.
Because we watch TV, and television makes it a big trial. So everybody gets behind what's on television. The murders in the hood that happen are never on television.
Yeah, but they're right in front of your house.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. But the outrage is caused by television and media. And no media at your urban radio stations, and I know we'll talk about that later, but, you know, perception's everything.
I think it's about finger-pointing. I mean, it's a lot easier to finger-point at somebody else than it is to finger-point at yourself, and ourselves meaning, you know, us as black people. It's a lot easier for us to do that. So I think that's part of the reason that it's much easier for us to do that. To finger-point and say what they're doing to us, what they're doing to us, instead of saying, what are we doing to each other? You know? And I mean, even if you look at it, white people, I mean, they're also finger-pointing about it as well. I mean, there's not a white person that, you know, that says, you know what? What we did to black people is so wrong so many years ago, you know, we need to take responsibility. No, they're saying, you know what? They need to get their act together. So that point, so it, It's finger pointing on both sides.
But we say that about each other.
Yes, absolutely.
Say it again?
Hold up. We don't say anything. We turn the cheek 9 out of 10
right.
times
right.
about
right.
everything.
Now, get my point. You're absolutely right. We don't have, in a lot of ways, we don't have the capacity to deal with things that are too heavy. But what I'm saying is that we talk about each other behind. I mean, we talk, like, we'll see stuff happen in our neighborhoods and we'll talk about it and tisk about it and shrug our shoulders. But then we ignore it. So when you say
amongst ourselves, we'll do that amongst ourselves, but on a large platform, you know, we won't do that. I mean, look at the heat Bill Cosby got. Bill Cosby, when he went out there talking about what black people should be doing and shouldn't do and where we're wrong at and where we're at fault, Bill Cosby was almost hung for that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For saying that kind of stuff, when he said that on a major platform like that. So, yeah, we do it, but it's like in a group of about 2 or 3 people, and that's as far as it goes. But when it comes to a global platform where other people can expose and hear it in the media, we elect not to do that.
That was also Miguel. Remember, he said that black people were judgmental and all the social networks went crazy. And I mean, he was absolutely right. Black folks will judge
right.
the crack in a sidewalk. We judge everything.
Look, I take heat for everything that I say and do. Mm-hmm. I'm loved by some, hated by most, because of some of the stuff over the years with Industry Ear at RapRehab.com, because I'm not scared of talking about things, because I own nobody. Nobody stays for my house. Nobody. I don't have to kiss any ass. And people always want you to be quiet. So every time, people are scared to talk up, because mm-hmm. everybody wants that last job that's about to end in 6 months anyway.
Mm-hmm. But then,
and I get tired of hearing about it.
But then my question goes back to, what does that have to do with us not responding or being responsible for stuff that happens in our own neighborhood? I mean, I agree with you that we don't have the bullhorn, or we don't have the resources to say, look at, you know, what we're doing to each other. But I'm wondering that even if we did, I mean, even if it was on the news, I think we'd probably be mad at the corporation for running the news story.
Absolutely.
More than anything else, it's like we don't want our dirty laundry exposed. We'd rather ignore it.
Right.
But when and I've heard right. white people say this, and it's very hard to fight, you know, I mean, or to disagree with them, because they're saying, well, why do you guys treat each other this way, but then the minute a white
right.
person does it, it's the worst thing in the world.
Right.
I wish
right.
I knew the answer, because that is definitely one of the biggest problems in the black community. We are very judgmental. We will throw stones and hide our hands. We're not accountable to each other. And I wish I knew the answer, because we probably would be so more advanced than where we are now, because that takes a lot of time and a lot of effort.
And
I wish I had the answer.
I guess we can also, well, there are two ways we can segue that. I think I'm going to go this route, though. If the one of the questions that I asked this week was, if you were walking down the street, and I'm going to add a little element to this, is if you're walking down the street late at night and you come across 4 different types of people, let's say it's 10, a group of 10, white college kids, street-dressed black men, policemen, or musicians, which one would you ignore? Or which one would you avoid? White college kids, street-dressed black men, policemen, or musicians. Which one or ones would you avoid? And why?
Well, I try to avoid everybody, to be honest. I'm on my P's and Q's for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the only one that's strapped every day with a 9mm on my hip.
So you,
I know it comes from all directions, but
so,
I know the stereotype gets you scared of the black male first.
Right.
But
absolutely.
I've also been sucker punched by a white dude, so I'm looking at everybody.
Hmm.
And the musicians, you know, but if you were not so politically correct, I wouldn't worry about a crowd of 10 gay men coming out of a club in Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
but they probably just kicked me or jacked me too, but... I feel more comfy around gay folks, and I'm around gay folks too.
What about the police?
Well, policemen.
Only if I have some weed on me.
No, policemen. Me and Dwayne talk about it. If I see a police or the sheriff pulling a car behind me, I've been known to pull off the highway, and nothing's wrong.
Absolutely.
Policemen scare me any day.
I mean, the two guns, I've probably been confronted by all of the same groups that you've listed,
mm-hmm.
but the two times that I've had a gun pulled on me, it's been by police officers.
Mm-hmm.
Police officers.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the first group that I would ignore. Yeah, if I had to choose.
It's almost like the police officers can be like the white college kids in a way, because you automatically know that whatever happens, you've already lost.
Yeah.
As a black man. It's like, I don't know how Jamila or the Portis feels about this, but you automatically know that whatever you do, whatever you say, even if it's in response to something they do first, you've already lost. Mm-hmm. So it's...
I will say...
Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was just going to say, as a black woman, I'm not too concerned with either of the groups. I'm kind of like Paul, where I'm on guard with everybody regardless,
mm-hmm.
but I am not more concerned about one group or the other,
mm-hmm.
and probably because I haven't had those issues personally, but I do know that they exist, and I do know that if I were a black male, I probably would say I would be a little more leery for the group of policemen than any of the others.
We used to ask that same question, you know, being that I'm in New York City. We used to ask it from this same perspective, was, you know, if you saw just various different groups and you were driving a cab, would you stop? You know what I mean? So,
mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, if you saw a group, if you saw the Wu-Tang Clan waiting for a cab, would you have stopped, you know?
I'd probably have crossed the street with them regardless.
No, exactly. And that's pretty much what all the black people said. They said, yo, we saw them waiting for a cab, we probably would ride past them.
Right.
You know?
You know, I remember I had an experience at, many years ago when I first started in radio. I was working for Foxy 105 in Columbus, Georgia. And I was doing a remote, and this old dude was being confronted by this young military guy. And the guy was upset with him about something. He owed him some money or something. So, and this all happened in a matter of 2 minutes. Another dude comes out of the club, and he tells the young guy, he's like, yo, hey, man, you know, leave him alone. You see that dude is scared. You don't mess with him. Very, you know, very good nature, just kind of, you know, trying to help the old guy out. So the dude's like, yeah, man, you're right. Soon as the Good Samaritan passed, the dude hit him so hard in the back of his head, I could have sworn I heard his skull crack. So the dude was laying on the ground having this massive seizure, and the other guy was stomping him. And I mean, everybody was like frozen. I mean, just standing there watching, like we thought we were witnessing a murder. And I think that was the first time I realized the capacity of anger that a black man can carry. So there is that element that you do wonder. If you walk down the street, it's like, who has had enough, you know,
mm-hmm.
and who is at the point where they're ready to explode?
Right.
Because you don't have nothing to lose anyway.
Right. Mm.
So I agree with both of you. I would probably avoid all of them, you know, just to be cautious. But, you know, it's unfortunate because I do think the media plays a part in that, too. I think the media makes us scared of each other.
Well, I think we all play a role in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we program it, we play it, we don't talk about it, we just don't have this discussion on a larger scale for the young folks, and that's why we fear black folks, just like white folks do. If trust mm-hmm. me, if four black guys knock on my door tonight, something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But are you gonna have your finger on the trigger though?
Yo, always.
I thought I heard Felicia. Did I hear Felicia earlier? I guess not.
Yeah, I think she signed on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. All right. So did you know what we're talking about? You want to chime in or you want us to keep going?
I guess it would depend off what kind of vibe I'm getting for that from that particular group. If I feel threatened, I'm not going to necessarily feel threatened because, you know, I'm walking by a group of people, but it depends how maybe they look at me or some kind of vibe, you know, intuition or something that I'm getting, I think would trigger whether I should be concerned or not. But I don't think I would single out any particular group of people.
You know,
because I've walked by a group of brothers and I've walked by all those groups. And I didn't experience anything negative.
You know, I don't know how many of you have dogs, but it's amazing how much respect you get when you have a dog.
Now, that's true.
I mean,
I've had one, and that's true.
Yeah, we respect dogs for some reason. I don't know why, but it's like if you walk by and you got you walk by any of those people, and of course, even you feel confident because you know the dog has your back. Unlike a friend that if some shit breaks out, and your friends go run in another direction and leave you there.
That's actually a very fair statement, but very true.
Advertise on the Radio Facts Radio Show and reach the decision makers in the industry. Contact staff at radiofacts.com.
Do urban stations really need to do news anymore? I mean, is it important? Are they looking at it from a perspective that people are getting their news from the internet? We don't need to do it anymore. The community's not interested.
Right.
You know, it's a waste of time. And we haven't bred any new talent to do it, blah, blah, blah. Well, what is the reason why we're not hearing that?
Money, because it costs money. It's part of streamlining and increasing profits. Do I think news is important? Yes. Do I think black folks would listen to black talk radio if it was done better? Do they have things to discuss? And do we need to localize radio so it talks about local elections and things? There's no place for black folks to get information anymore, except on the web. And most of the time, it's national news, it's not local news.
Or it's not news.
Yeah. I think that what Paul is just saying is unfortunately a function of so much syndication because they're not going to touch on the local stories, they're going to touch on the national stories. However, I do think that it is the responsibility of each local station to find a way to make sure that news is present on their airwaves. I just really believe that, whether it's urban AC, it doesn't matter. It's great that people want to be entertained, above educated, but it's still our responsibility as programmers to make sure that they're still educated and they're still getting the information. And it's really up to them to be creative on how they present it. So, you know, you can pay a news director, you know, part-time to come in part-time, just like you would a DJ or just like you would, you know, a mix. Show job. It's just a decision, I think. And I think it's a decision to eliminate it from your cash as if it doesn't matter. News matters.
And these licenses are granted to serve local communities.
That's true.
And it's taken out. You know, the civil rights movement, I did a lecture, and I, you know, I've studied black radio for a long time, and that was a big part of the civil rights movement. Everybody trusted the radio stations for news and information and the lead drives. And, you know, that's where the disconnect started to happen. I remember we had news and public service and things that really meant something. And people fell in love with personalities just not because they talk smart.
Exactly.
I mean, being raised on New York City radio, I know, Paul, you know, Bob Slade, who did news for BLS Kiss and was a local celebrity in New York City, and that's all he did was news. But he was a celebrity to us. We listened to what Bob had to say. It was like a highlight for us, you know, being raised on the radio. So I still think that need and that interest would still exist.
And someone's probably going to get mad at me for saying it like this, but I think it's irresponsible. And it's ignorant. If you're programming a station and you don't see the value in bringing news to your audience, you're doing them a disservice.
Yeah, but if you ask programmers now, you hear crickets. It'd be silence. And people know it's right, But nobody's going into that office to say, look, man, maybe we need to do some local news in the morning and afternoons. Mm-hmm. Maybe we need to cover something, you know. And really, the money's really not that much, but it's just been cut out and nobody speaks up. That's why local news really doesn't get covered.
Hopefully we can ruffle some feathers.
The Radio Facts Radio Show is brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
We talked earlier, and I'm actually going to go off the record here for a quick second. We were talking earlier about the House of Cards. And one thing that I meant to put in here and I didn't put in here was Ray Nagin. The situation that just happened there, of course, made me think about Detroit. What is going on with the black mayors? Do you think that it happens with most, or if there's something going on in the mayor's office, period, and these guys were spotlighted or what? I mean, because I would have thought that he would have been much smarter. When that city was on such high profile at that time, during the Katrina situation, that to do something stupid like that would have, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but when you check local politicians, you know, I forgot the congressman that got caught with $90,000 in his fridge. I got a cat who I grew up with in D.C. who's doing time. There's a lot of politicians, black, white, green, and yellow. It's a criminal business. You know, we don't talk about it. So I'm not surprised that the Kwame's and the Ray Nagins, they're all trying to get that piece of the pie.
I think they get whoever they have something out for. Because I think that probably the majority of the politicians have dirt on their hands. And I just think if someone is out to get you, they're going to get you. So I think it depends on who the politician is, who he upsets, who he's in bed with. I mean, I don't necessarily, race may play a role in it, but for the most part, I think they get whoever they're out to get.
I'll say this, I've been born in Detroit, but also working in Detroit during the Kwame Kilpatrick, during the Kwame Kilpatrick time. Mm-hmm. And he's also a friend of mine, and I will say this, to him, that, yes, politics is horrible, it's dirty, it's all of that stuff. It's who you're in bed with, who you're not. It's definitely a networking, you know, game. I mean, we talked about House of Cards, and I believe that 90% of what I see on House of Cards is absolutely true. Nothing just happens. Mm-hmm. However, I will say this about Mayor Philwell, he's not mayor anymore, but Kwame Kilpatrick and Ray Nagin, that they might want to get you, but you have to give them something to get.
Right.
And so what happens is once you're caught, you know, whether your hand is in the cookie jar, you cheated on your, whatever the charges are, they unfortunately are going to, you know, Kim Worthy, the prosecutor in Michigan, who really looked like it's personal, who was really out to get him and just kept going and kept going and kept going on investigations and charging him, you have to give her something to get you on. So if you don't put yourself in a position to be gotten, then... So unfortunately, it is unfair how much time he got, but you're the one who gave them something to get you on.
And
he's a nice guy, but...
But he wasn't that bright. Anybody who leases a Lincoln Navigator for $800 a month that's 4 years old had to be crooked.
I'm going to say he probably got caught up.
Yeah.
Because that's what greed does. Whether it's him or anybody else or, okay, this is a radio show. I mean, this is a show and, I don't have anything to lose. But whether it's you're the mayor and you're doing something not right, or you're a program director. This is Radio Facts, and you're not doing right. It's all greed, and you keep doing it because that greed just keeps you wanting more. You might be okay with getting a little something on the side, but then you realize, oh, that feels good. It is.
Right.
I could use a little bit more of that, and that's all that is. That's just greed.
Oh, you sounded like Darren Sharper, the NFL player, drugging people all over the...
That's terrible.
That just shows you that people are sick.
That's sickness. That's the sickness.
Yeah, but that's the pursuit of the booty.
And you and you know what else about greed is even worse? It starts to blind you. You start to step on people that you shouldn't be stepping on, and that's how you create enemies, which is probably what happened with Ray and Kwame. You know, because Kwame was just arrogant from the beginning. I mean, just the whole hip-hop mayor thing and, you know, and the campaign. Speaking of which, do you remember when, what's this dude's name? Works with Diddy now. It used to be Diddy's boss. Glasses.
Andre
Harrell. You remember that whole thing when he took over Motown?
They did a $1 million ad campaign just for that, yeah.
And an all-white party.
You know what, though? But now, what we're talking now about ego, because, you know, for some of us, it's about just being the business person. You don't have to be out front. Mm-hmm. But then for some people, they got to be out front. They want to satisfy that need to be the talent and the person and the artist and the business person. And it's like, can you really do both?
It seemed like Kwame wanted to be the celebrity.
There's a very thin line between ego and insecurity. And a lot of times people do that so that people can't see that they have no skills. So it's like, if I'm always in your face and you think I'm a celebrity, then you'll never realize I'm not doing my job. And then let's not, we can't forget Marion Barry, but maybe we should.
Yeah, okay. It's intoxicating. And people get drunk off their success.
Right.
And everybody can't handle it. They can't handle the money. They can't handle the fame. That's why somebody gets pregnant, they're trying to murder them, like Ray Caruth or what, you know. And why do so many black athletes go broke? And you have to admit it's disproportionate to white athletes. So maybe we just hear their stories more, but it's part of that ego that you have to sort of carry around 10 people like Allen Iverson did his whole career, and they're all gone. And Michael Vick buying 22 cars, and, you know, but now he's a different man, and some can come back from it and some can't.
Well, you got a second chance, right. But I also think that, you know, it's so funny you should mention Ray Caruth, because I was actually doing some research on him for a story the other day, and his son is like, should be about 14 now. And they had a picture of him. I was actually going to put it in Radio Facts. It looks exactly like him, but you know he has brain damage. He has cerebral palsy.
Right. Right.
And I thought, so Ray should be getting out because he got 18 years. We're talking what, 2001? And I'm sorry.
Right.
Yeah, 2001. Yeah, so he's got another, what, 3 or 4 years and he'll be out. He did all that to get 18 years in prison, and all he had to do was take care of the kid for 18 years. It's like, look at what he lost to do 18 years in prison. You lost your career. You lost, you know, and that kid is screwed up for life.
His life, yeah.
And I
took another life, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what possessed him to do that. I don't
but
get that.
But that just shows that the brother's not that smart.
Yeah.
You know, just like the football player in New England, there's never a smart murderer. Because if you're thinking about murdering somebody, you're not that brain.
Well, also, you have to consider when you talk about them going through their money, when you have not been trained, see, growing up as poor black kids, a lot of times there is no dinner. You know, there is no lunch, and there is no, you know, going out to eat and having conversation. You know, you grab a hot dog, you run outside, that's it. You know, whereas in white families, you know, the father comes home, he talks about his day at work. You know, the kids have some training as far as finances and how business works. So you give a kid that grew up on food stamps who was humiliated and embarrassed and, you know, had run over shoes, and you give him millions of dollars, of course he's not going to know how to spend it. And and Michael Vick got a second chance, which most of them don't. So,
right.
Yeah, he had to hit rock bottom. Right. Just talk about the Nicki Minaj thing from last week, the big controversy using the Malcolm X picture. Wouldn't it have seemed that Nicki would have learned from Lil Wayne's situation with Emmett Till?
No. Why is this?
What was your question?
The Nicki Minaj using Malcolm X for her new record. And the image, did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then she deleted it and then she apologized for it. And I'm saying that since Lil Wayne is her mentor, and she had, and Lil Wayne had the issue with Emmett Till last year, It would have seemed that she would have thought.
It doesn't affect them. It really doesn't. It's a flash in the pan. Rick Ross got a new record. He's still talking about Molly and UONO or whatever. The same stuff that got Rick Ross lost a multi-million dollar deal with Reebok, he's doing on the new record. So, the ego's, but he also bought a 120-acre ranch. So the ego is bigger than, the criticism.
Let me ask everybody, why is today's rapper or musician or actor or actress so disconnected from our history?
Well, I feel that nowadays the artists most of them, in my opinion, don't struggle as much as artists did back in the day, where they had to, even going far back as the 60s, where they had to do the Chitlin circuit for just dollars. Now I just feel like everybody has money, so they're comfortable. So nothing else matters as long as they have, their money, their riches, their luxuries. They don't care about all that other stuff.
Well, I think it's our fault. I think it's the generation in front of their fault for not teaching them before. There's not enough teaching going on. When I was younger, I looked up to mentors and role models from the basketball court at the local park that put you in line. Nobody puts you in line anymore. It's almost like, oh, don't talk to him, don't touch him. You can't tell young boys something. That there's a disconnect from generations. And, there's an article on raprehab.com. Why doesn't hip-hop respect its elders? Because they don't know who their elders are. And their elders got burned and are half broke. And they don't respect them. They can't. Everybody can't go out with Chuck D for a day.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It is a lack of accountability. Because if Nicki Minaj or whoever is responsible for creating this artwork and saying it's okay, they didn't ask anybody. There's nobody that they're accountable to. There's nobody that they're running stuff by to say, what do you think, that's going to tell them the truth? Because this artwork, I mean, it is offensive because there's a great disconnect. Some Down Productions did the same type of cover.
Right. I was just thinking that, yep.
Yeah, and it's like, with no.
He didn't use Malcolm X's image in it.
No, he didn't. But
he had the gun in his hand. He had the gun in his hand, and he was looking out the window with blinds and shades.
Absolutely,
right.
And he used his
right.
line.
She
by
used
all
the
means
image.
Necessary.
Right.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. He used the same line by all means necessary, so we all know what it was relating to. At the end of the day, who are you accountable to? It's cool to be young and have talent, but somebody just said to me today, talent and wisdom kind of need to be together. And if you only bring the talent, you need somebody to bring the wisdom. So to be able to make it a good balance, you're not accountable to anybody. So you didn't even think to run that by somebody who is a little bit more wise, who might be a little bit more conscious, and not just your yes person in the group to say, what do you think? So they can be honest with you and say, that's not a good idea.
Hmm. I saw a video, you saying with disconnected from our history, or it's even deeper than that, because I saw a video one day where this grandmother was trying to break up a fight between her daughter, her granddaughter, and some girl in the neighborhood, and one of the girls started beating up the grandmother. And I thought, when I was a kid, you would have been executed for something like that. I mean, the whole neighborhood.
The grandmother could have been 41 or in her 30s.
Well, you might be right. She may have been a great great grandmother, because she was about 50. So,
I was the grandmother.
But
that's unfortunately true.
Yeah, but she. was definitely. Let me say, she was grandmother Lee. She could have been the great great grandmother, because she was definitely like. In her 60s. And the girl was like a teenager, like 15, 16. I mean, she was beating the shit out the old lady. And the old lady was hanging on to the fence, and nobody was coming into her defense. And, they were filming it and laughing. And I was like, this would have never happened, when we were growing up. So the disconnect is not just from our history. It's directly from our families.
Yeah, but that's why I said earlier, Kevin, that we're not talking to the next generation enough and not having these conversations or not walking into that room and saying, hell no, this ain't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's, you know, there are no more neighborhoods anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That village concept is gone. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to listen to Miss Peoples and Miss Jacobs on my block like they were my mother, but now if some kid, you talk to a kid on the street, on a bus, like, I remember they would tell us to be quiet, and you didn't know the person, and you disrespect your elders, but that's been long gone.
Yeah.
Everybody's worried about getting stabbed or shot.
Yeah. Okay, when you look at the industry, we're going to wrap up, but when you look at the industry right now, if you could, well, actually, there's two things I want to talk about. In your view, what is the worst thing about the music industry right now, music and radio?
I say lack of creativity.
Yeah.
And even from a record company perspective, you know, everyone is pretty much doing the same thing. You look at the, you know, those who are controlling the channels, the stations, the way a record is marketed and promoted, the way a record is recorded, the way a record sounds, it's all the same thing. The music industry has become like assembly line work. You know, it's like working for General Motors. You know, it's the same thing in and over.
Mm-hmm. But don't you think that the labels may have an abundance of material, or they may not be putting out as much because they know that radio's not going to play it?
Why isn't radio going to play it?
Because they only have 30 records, or they only have a playlist.
Yeah, but I just think if any major label wants us to play, they can get it played. I think you can build up support. I don't see too many stations rejecting a bunch of artists, key artists anymore. Come on, man. We know the deal.
That's the word, key artists. But I'm saying anything new. So anything new kind of gets lost in the shuffle. What is the best thing, in your opinion?
Best thing about what?
The best thing about the industry.
To promote and market your own music.
Yes.
Your own social media fan base. Not having to rely on a major deal anymore.
Right.
So I think that's a few things.
I'd say, it builds an entrepreneurial spirit. It builds, you know, an industrious spirit where people who never would have ever thought about owning their own companies or being their own bosses or whatever the case is, the music industry allows you to do that. Mm-hmm. And allows you, you know, to build that kind of something which we as black people have not been taught, you know, in terms of building our own companies and businesses. But you see that. It helps you build a hustler's mentality.
Right.
You know, which I think is pretty, is very, you know, very monumental.
Right, right.
Oh, boy. I'm about to play my violin. Go ahead.
I would say I have to agree with the worst thing would be the lack of creativity, but also I would have to add in their corporate programming when it comes to radio. I think that we, if you go back to the days of hiring people that you trust and not that you can control, people who you know are going to roll up their sleeves and get it done and be creative and be productive, loosen those reins. To me, that is one of the worst things, along with the lack of creativity on the record side. And then the best thing is, I agree with Tosh's, social media, it's an open canvas. You know, being an indie artist, it's an open canvas. You can do better than what you probably thought because it does sharpen your entrepreneurial skills. And, you know, it's like, hey, the world is yours. Go do your thing.
Mm-hmm.
So those are, that's how it's the best and worst, in my opinion.
I think the worst thing is that urban radio people are afraid to speak up and that they don't market themselves. And I guess coming from my perspective, it's really unfortunate because you see what happens when they don't have a job. You know, when they don't have a job, they don't have resources. And then they're trying to find another job. So it's like, if you don't tell people who you are, how do they know who you are? And we can't always, I know a lot of people waiting for a job that's probably not going to come right now. You know, they're waiting for an opportunity that's already happened for them.
Well, the sad part about this business, I find that you really only get another job when you're in a job.
Yeah.
Like, people tend to look down on you when you're in between jobs.
It's like you're on welfare.
But if you're at another company and you're already in the midst of doing things, people are more likely to want to take you on their team or hire you. But when you're in between gigs, this business looks down on
Right. They look at you like a charity case. They look at you like a charity case.
Well, that's kind of true.
Yeah. And where you come in, you go out. But the worst thing
that's
is...
That's what my dad always tells me.
There's a whole lot of people in this business that go to work every day, and they are sniffing that can of Kiss ass. And that's a terrible feeling to be in a job where you know that you sort of just got to watch your back and just mosey along. It's painful. And towards the end of my radio career, radio started to get like that for me. I lost my hair. I was going bald. And then when I recreated myself a year later, I had dreads. And then I never worked for anybody again. But it was just great now feeling like you were under that 48.7 bus ride in for some oldies. I mean, it got too painful.
Yeah. And you know what? Yeah, it's so funny you should mention that, because I had an experience like that. I quit around 99 or a little bit before that. And one of my last jobs was a gig here in L.A. where my boss fired me in a meeting, in a staff meeting. And he was just really underhanded. It was real dirty. It wasn't like it was, I didn't know what was happening. It wasn't like we got to an argument or anything. He just announced that I was leaving and left me, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm like sitting there like, how do I respond to this? You know? So I had to kind of go with the flow. But you know what I tell you, it's the people who did me wrong in the industry that I actually should thank. Because they started that fire underneath me to be an entrepreneur. It's like, okay, I don't want to work for anybody else. Yeah, I don't want to deal with that anymore. Right. You know, we all know how good we are, but it takes, I don't know if it's just a cultural thing, but when somebody tells us we can't do something, a lot of times that's what really gets you going. You know, so.
No, when I worked at the Beat, I felt like every day was my last day up in there. Every day I felt was my last day because I wasn't an ass kisser.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what sustained me there so long is that I had other skills. I knew how to produce and edit, but I also had a strong tie to the Black community.
Mm-hmm.
So I eventually became the liaison director there because I had such strong ties with the politicians, everything from politicians to the gangbangers. So, but I felt like my last day. I mean, for the last 13 years, I was there. And then a program director told me one day that he would, that I didn't have what it took to be a full-time DJ or jock on the air, and he would never hire me if so. But I outlasted his ass at the station. He was fired. I outlasted several management teams, ownership, jocks, all because I kind of stayed under the radar. I was part-time, plus I was a community affairs director. So, but yeah, it's crazy to feel like every day that you walk in the door, you're going to get that last and final.
Wow.
You know, and
that's why everybody got to get that hustle on.
And that's
get
that.
That's
actually the last thing I wanted to discuss is that all of us have one thing in common. We're entrepreneurs. And what we just talked about is one of the main reasons I became one. I don't like other people having control. I don't like people looking over my shoulder. I don't like office politics. I don't like that feeling of, are my shoes untied and am I going to get fired today? You know, or is the format going to change, or did I do something wrong and I don't know about? I love the fact that I'm in control, but there are some misconceptions about being an entrepreneur. And one of mine's, but the biggest one I think, and I wanted you guys to chime into this, is that all we do is sit around and make money all day. Is that the same for you?
I think everybody knows they got to get their hustle on.
No, we know that. But I'm saying outside, people outside of being entrepreneurs, people who work for other people, think that we sit around all day. And it's one or the other. Either we sit around all day and don't do anything and make money, or we don't do anything and don't make any money. So it's,
I'm going to say this. They can think whatever they want to think, but 9 times out of 10, only a certain percentage of the population are qualified to be entrepreneurs anyway, which is why most of them still work in jobs that they don't necessarily like, because they don't have what it takes. So think whatever you want to think. At the end of the day, it's a wonderful mental freedom, even if it's a stronger hustle. But if you really think about it, when I was working in corporate, that was a different, it's still a hustle. It's a hustle to be recognized. It's a hustle to break the glass ceiling. It's a hustle to make sure that, you know, you get your just due. It's just a different kind of hustle, and I'm just one of those people who are willing to take the risk.
I think that people think it's easier than it is. I think people think you working for yourself is easier, when it's actually a lot harder working for yourself than really
I don't think regular job. I don't think they think it's easier because nobody tries it. We all know 1,000 companies that are, you know, Big Monster Inc., Peter Paul Productions, or everybody's got a card in a business and a company they've never made a dime off of. You know, I deal with a gazillion would-be record labels that independent want to be on my site, and nobody has a budget and nobody has a plan. And
they don't want to be on your site.
No, but they don't know how to be successful. And me and Dwayne talk about it. All these independent artists don't have a plan. They just think the plan is, put their stuff out. You know, and that's the real shame about it, that they think, you know, I always tell them, if you spend more money in the studio than you do on promotion and marketing, you're going to fail. You know, and they don't get that.
You know, and if, ironically, for me doing Radio Facts, I deal with both major labels and independents, and I tell you, the independents work you harder than anybody else. And a lot of times they don't have the budget, and you try to work with them and you kind of regret that you did sometimes. But they don't, I agree with you, Paul. It's like they don't see, and even some majors don't understand the power of promotion, because you got to send subliminal messages. I mean, even if you do something on a website and somebody just sees it, they could remember, they forgot they need to add it this week, or, you know, they need to give it more spins or whatever else, if they see it. But if they don't see it, you know, out of sight, out of mind, or they may want to download it. So there are, you know, there are ways that, you know, you could definitely get your message across if you're hitting that target. But a lot of people don't see it. And I think that one of my greatest things about being an entrepreneur, that people fail to understand. I agree with you guys. It's hard, but it's also very easy, because if you love what you're doing, you're never working. I mean, I could do 16 hours of what I do, and it would be like doing 3 weeks at a job.
Yeah. And it's worth it in the end. It's the satisfaction of knowing that you're doing this for yourself, and not so much building an empire and making a lot of money and being successful for someone else who may or may not appreciate you in the end.
Right.
But it's like,
I think, you know, a lot of times, one of the things that I notice is, I think that a lot of times, a lot of people don't take the entrepreneur or take it seriously, because of the fact a lot of them think that we're only doing this because we can't get a job, or that no one else wants us.
Like,
that's a perception. Well, oh, if someone offered him a job tomorrow, he would close that company in 10 minutes and come work with someone. So he's just doing that to buy his time until somebody else offers a job, you know? And, you know, that might be the case for some, but, you know, there's many of us who see the reward, who see the, you know, upside, who see the no longer having the kind of stress that you once had.
Exactly.
No, I've been offered jobs doing what I do, and I've turned some jobs down. But a friend of mine once said, it was so funny, he said that the best part about being an entrepreneur is that you can't go look in the mirror and say, well, Kevin, we're going to have to cut back and we're going to have to let you go. You can't say that to yourself.
Right. Exactly.
So, yeah, exactly. I wouldn't have it. It's been 20 years for me. I wouldn't have it any other way. So that is it. And I, as always, team, I greatly appreciate your input. Is there anything anybody's working on that you want to talk about?
I finished my crowdfunding campaign.
Good. Well, how did you do?
I raised $11,000.
Wow. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And so I do have a studio home, and that money will be invested into marketing and building the programming and any extras that I need outside of what the studio is already offering. So I plan to launch probably late April, early May.
You know, I don't know if you if you know any grant writers, but there, what you do is there's grants for that stuff.
You know what? Actually, my father and I are working on a curriculum and a program to do a broadcast and new media academy.
Okay.
So we're in the process of putting that actually together now to get a grant.
Mm-hmm.
So that is in the plan, as well as launching the radio network.
Get your nonprofit.
But that is definitely.
Get your nonprofit out of the way because it could take forever.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a process.
Mm-hmm. Dwayne, are you working on anything?
Yeah, I'm working on a couple projects right now.
You want to talk about those?
As you just mentioned about that. I'm in the process of trying to get my nonprofit going as well. So, yeah, I totally feel you on that whole, it takes forever to get that whole process and getting, you know, that status. I'm like, whoa, this is taking much longer than I anticipated.
It really doesn't take that long.
Dwayne, you want to talk about your projects? That's kind of an inside joke. Paul, what are you working on?
Just trying to, you know, I told you I got a new website, Brain Food HD, coming out in about the next month. It's going to be a little bit more political, but raprehab.com, it continues to be the place. We just changed the tagline to Where Consciousness Lives, the ripoff of Where Hip Hop Lives, because the stations that say that don't do it. It's just a slogan that they drill on your head. And the good thing I like about doing Rap Rehab, I have no ties with any sponsors. I have no ties with any people. So the articles that the writers send in, we have no prejudice. And we'll try to tell the truth and more facts than fiction. And keep sharing the site because I want to be big like Radio Facts one day.
You know what, Paul? I want to ask you.
What's it called again? RapRehab.com.
And your mortgage.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, I love the way you open up the format. So you're not just talking about music. You're talking about politics. You're talking about, you know, music that goes beyond urban. And that's what I really like.
Yeah, like I told you, Joe Davis, he wrote an article on how Michael Dunn got away with murder. You know, Joe's an old radio guy turned attorney. CNN called. He was on Anderson Cooper last night for 10 minutes talking about it.
Oh, wow.
So the good thing is it's reaching people, and folks should look up that interview. It was real funny. So, Joe's Miles Davis, the younger brother. It's a good piece.
It's on your site?
Yeah.
Okay. Whose brother, Porter? Whose brother?
Miles Davis's brother, Joe Davis.
Oh, wow.
He used to be on Power 99 FM, the Star 94 in Orlando for a long time.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. And Jamila, what about you? You working on anything?
Same project. So check us out. I'm just working every day to make great brands better at LewisCortezGroup.com.
Good. All right. So until next week, I definitely appreciate everybody's help once again. So getting it out first thing in the morning, and I'll keep you posted.
All right. I hope it gets another 20,000.
Thank you.
20,000. All right. Thanks.
And this show was much better than last week.
You know what? I didn't like last week's show either.
You didn't?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was a little. I think it was a little. The content may not have been, you know.
Yeah, it was a little older.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the content was a little.
We were talking about Leon Isaac Kennedy last week.
Yeah. That was sort of whack.
Well, you're listening to the Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.